Bendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, episode 277. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me this evening, we have Scott Pratt.
Hey, y'all. How's everything going?
And Harrison Milfeld.
Howdy, everybody. Everybody finally fully recovered from E3, I presume? I mean, even though it's been about, almost a month.
Yeah, for better or for worse, things have definitely settled in the gaming industry.
Yes, and I'll tell you things that have settled in. Once again, Eugene is no longer here, and we are concerned. So I believe we have the milk cartons out right now, ready to find his disappearance. But luckily, though, as Scott pointed out to me, you know, every time after we stop recording this podcast, is he is having posts on Facebooks and liking several things, so we know he's alive. So there is that.
He's alive, but he just doesn't like us anymore.
He doesn't. I'm led to believe that our earlier podcast we did in our Always Online podcast, where we're talking about DRM issues with Microsoft Xbox One, and I think Microsoft may have got a hold of him or something like that. I mean, we had to sacrifice somebody, and I think Eugene was that, you know, was just the one to go.
I think they kidnapped him.
You know, that would not surprise me in the one bit. I mean, he's not hard to find. if you ever see photos of him, I mean, man has quite the fro, so.
Okay. Today's show we've got split up into three main segments. We're going to start off with what we've all been playing, following Nintendo news, and finally we're going to finish off on a feature on second screen gaming. To start with, I've recently picked up a couple of Nintendo titles myself, so I'm going to kickstart the What Have You Been Playing section. The first of these two games is a 3DS title called Animal Crossing New Leaf. Just to check you guys' background on the history of this, who's actually played any of the Animal Crossing series?
You can't see it right now, but I'm raising my hand right now at the moment, so...
That's good.
There's that. Last one I...
Two-thirds of the podcast crew so far?
I have played the Animal Crossing on the Wii, and I enjoyed it, but I didn't play it a whole lot. But I did play it probably for probably a good couple days worth of gameplay.
Oh, okay.
See, that's what I was. I mean, I was a big fan of the first one on the GameCube, and, you know, I was quite immersed in that one, you know, for months on end. And then I didn't really get the DS version as well. Wild World, I believe that was what it was called, and City Folk on the Wii. That one I was just particularly happy for because I felt like it was more, at the time, I thought, you know, I need something for my Wii, and I felt like it's Animal Crossing is more tailored to, you know, console gaming. And like I said, you know, previously, it's it was just kind of more the same in a sense. I mean, I just really couldn't find anything really changed from what I saw on the GameCube version to kind of want me to play a little bit more. And, you know, reading from, like, New Leaf right now, it's... I kind of changed my stance on how I feel like Animal Crossing is more tailor-made for handhelds.
I have to agree with you there. In fact, it does seem that New Leaf is the first game in the series in a while, as it were, to introduce some new additions to the game. It does seem it was stuck in this rut where it just adds extras to what it's currently doing. It would just add more fish, it would add more things you can put in your house. But not actually let you do anything extra in the game. What New Leaf brings to the table is it lets you become the mayor of the town. And with the new mayor powers, you can set, at least one of the new features is letting you set audiences upon the town. And using this system, you can change how the town works in various different ways. For example, in the town I have, I've made it so all the shops stay open really late. Which, as you guys may have guessed, suits my gameplay habits quite nicely, where earlier Animal Crossing games couldn't really played in that way. You would have to play it in the day if you actually do want to sell items in the shop. And if you were stuck playing at night, all you could do is catch some fish, store in your house for the morning and when the shop's open. There are some other new features with New Leaf. For example, they've introduced the swimsuit, which lets your character go swimming. As well as going into the sea, you can also dive down and catch new types of fish all around. sea items, as it were. But what is good about having Animal Crossing on the 3DS is the fact I've actually been able to download it straight onto the SD card, which I've been waiting for this series to have some sort of function where it could be built into the system, because it's the perfect sort of game to play in between a larger game, where you can just kind of step back, take a breather for, even if it's just 5 to 10 minutes, and jump into your Animal Crossing town, and then either go back to the real world or jump back into the other game you're playing without having to swap discs or swap carts.
I kind of agree with that one. I think Nintendo even mentioned that, for people who are picking this up, that they should, download this digitally. And, the reasoning being is, just to have that title on your console as far as, letting it go for a little bit. And when you mentioned that you keep your stores up late, you basically Walmartized your shops, I assume.
Yeah, essentially. And the interesting thing is that the town folk actually stay up later, too. So it's interesting how they enforce that across the actual villages, in addition to the shops.
Did they come with greeters?
Well, greeters? Oh, well, in the shops themselves?
Yeah.
You upgrade your shop separately. I'm only on the second level of the main shop, which is the shop which Nook used to run, which now his kids run.
Yeah, that's what I asked a friend of mine. We were at a Cardinals baseball game about a couple weeks ago, and we went to two games together. And the second game, I didn't want to lug my 3DS XL around because basically carrying that around in my pocket is just a pain as it is. And as much as I love the handheld, and just the design and the comfortability of it, but he was playing Animal Crossing New Leaf on there, and in between innings, I'm just sitting there just watching him play it. And I asked him about, let me guess, is Tom Nook still asking for your mortgage half the time, whatever, just being that greedy kind of, overlord of, of the whole Animal Crossing world? And he's like, no, it's actually his kids are running the little shop right now. I'm like, ah, so I see the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in this game.
Well, actually, it's Tom Nook is in the game. He has his own building, which he's now exclusively does the retail estate. And not only do you have to pay him, huge amounts of bells to upgrade your house, you also gladly accept payments for kind of house accessories which go outside your house. So he's still up to his wily ways. And what I thought was actually really funny in this game is it takes Tom Nook's character a step even further. When you first start your game, walks you around and he asks you, where would you like your new house to be built? Which you think fantastic. Before, you just have to walk up to one of the pre-existing houses and say, I want to be here. So you choose your patch of land, it shows you what your new house is going to be like, and because you can't buy the house, he sets up a nice tent for you in the area instead. And so you can pay your first payments.
So basically you're homeless almost when you get there. It's like, yeah, welcome to your new town, and everything like that. Oh yeah, here's a tent for you. And good luck.
Not only are you homeless, you are the mayor before this happened, so you are a homeless mayor.
That sounds unprecedented.
Only from Nintendo.
Hey, kids, don't worry. I mean, even if you live out in the streets, you could still become a mayor. Don't worry. Oh, there's hope for you. One thing I liked just to kind of ask you about, New Leaf, is obviously you can have people visit your towns and so not, but what other features actually differentiate this from, say, the other, from Wild World on the DS?
For being on the 3DS, it gets to take advantage of the new friend system, which is built into the OS. So anyone you already have on your friend list, if they obviously pick up Animal Crossing, you can then visit their village without obviously having to swap any codes. And what you can also do, when you visit someone else's village, if you go up to that person and there's a button on the touchscreen to set that character in your best friend list. And as corny as it sounds, what it lets you do is, when you're not playing online with anyone, you have this kind of party chat going on the bottom screen. So if someone else is playing Animal Crossing, regardless of if they've switched anything on, as long as they've got their wireless on, if you're in their best friends list, you'll see that they're online in the game, and you can instantly send them a message. Which defeats a problem with a lot of Nintendo games have had, of arranging games themselves. So if you see your friends online, you can send them a message do you want to go over my village? Can I go over your village? I need some of your fruits. And you can get them to open up their gates to let you in online from the game itself. And I've had a couple of real-world experiences of that working, so it's really nice to be able to do this in a Nintendo game.
I'm curious, what did you name your town by chance? I mean, is it anything a little bit clever? Or, I mean, what I usually like to do, I like to put innuendos in my towns and stuff like that. I mean, for that, I felt like I was going to... I'm already deciding that I'm going to name my town after, you know, one of the Metroid areas in Metroid. So...
If I had known I'd been asked this, I might have called it something else. But my town name's stuck since the GameCube edition, which I was making an RPG at the time, and it happened, so I just used the main town from that. So my Animal Crossing town is called Mortek, and I can't even remember which game that was from at the time. But that name has stuck through as my Animal Crossing town name more so than what it was going to be for that game.
One of my favorite things to do, and yes, this is kind of cruel, on the GameCube edition of Animal Crossing, since you could trade, you know, visit your towns through via memory cards.
And oh, yes.
One thing I would like to do, like a friend of mine was going on vacation, like, yeah, you can visit my town, whatever. And, you know, I kind of had an evil grin on my face at the time, and what I would do...
Shovel?
Oh, no, I would not only... this is what I would do. I would just go crazy, and, you know, I wouldn't talk to anybody for about a good week while my friend was on vacation. And, yeah, I chopped down all the trees, and I dug close to 5 or 6 dozen or so holes in the town. And I told him when I came back, I was like, so, man, did you enjoy my town? I was like, yeah, dude, I had a lot of fun. Hands it back, and about an hour later, when he looks in there, I'm like, why did you chop down all my apple trees? I'm like... sorry, man, they had to go. You're handing it to me. I'm going to leave my mark.
Yeah, you can definitely do a lot of damage in someone else's town. I'm actually a bit surprised that they still let you do that. I mean, it's obviously a good thing. But just with the ease of access to people's towns now. And, yeah, they used to get little party together. The amount of ruthless damage you could do within a very short amount of time with a couple of axes or a couple of shovels. One last thing I did want to mention about New Leaf was it was to do with multiplayer modes, which is the return of the Tropical Island, which was first a thing through the GameCube and Game Boy Advance's connectivity. But beyond the fact it's an island and Cap'n takes you across there on his boat, that's kind of where the connection stopped between the two. Now, what the new island's used for is for multiplayer. So you and up to 3 other people...
Multiplayer, so basically we can have a challenge of chopping down everybody's trees?
Well, what you can do, on this island, you can choose from various different multiplayer modes. So these are kind of cooperative, competitive games. And they range between being able to collect more fruits than everyone, or be able to catch more fish than everyone else, or be able to find certain objects. And there's some way you have to work together. And you'll have a shopping list of items you need to find within this island. And because you only have a certain amount of time, what you need to do is work with each other. And if you find an item which is on someone else's list, you can let them know and they can head over there. Or you can grab it and you can take it to them. So I think there's about 6 of these sort of games. And they go up in levels of difficulty, at least to a second stage. They are all really quite good fun. So it's good to see them adding this extra multiplayer content, and these will work online and local wireless.
I mean, this is really good as far as, like, one of a, you know, another good premier title for the 3DS, and even its sales are showing pretty well. I mean, as we mentioned last time, is this one was, like, had the largest sales via, you know, digital sales for the Nintendo eShop. I mean, it just definitely kind of shows how far, you know, Animal Crossing has grown as a series here in both North America and Europe. And it's really looking far with, like, how much is becoming more of a more and more by each year a flagship title franchise for, you know, Nintendo.
Yeah, it's still number 3 in the UK sales charts. Or still in the top 3, I should say. It went down from, I think, from first last week to third now.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, it is. And, Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I'll do, I'll jump onto my second game I've been playing recently, which is Game & Wario for the Wii U.
Wait, those exist? Games on the Wii U?
They do. And they come in some very weird forms, apparently.
What is this cartridges I see?
No, it does have a lovely print on its CD of Wario's face. But it does come on a optical disc format, unfortunately, opposed to a cartridge, but it does mean we do get to play this game on the system. Now, Game & Wario is a very bizarre game in that it's a spin-off of a spin-off series of essentially a spin-off series, being the Wario series being a spin-off of Mario and WarioWare being a spin-off of the Wario games, and this Game & Wario being a spin-off of WarioWare. It's essentially a collection of traditional mini-games in the style of high score arcade games, and you have two distinct modes between one player and two player. There's about a dozen or so one player games, and the priority in most of them is to get the highest score, and it keeps a local scoreboard, not an online scoreboard, of each of these games and the different local profiles which have played them. The actual games themselves have a very wide variety both in terms of actual gameplay types and in terms of just downright quality of the games. Some of them just almost feel like flash games where compared to some of them which feel like very polished titles in themselves. I think it's an interesting point to say that my favourite game of the single players is a game called Gamer, which is essentially WarioWare. Now, if you haven't heard already, what the Gamer game is WarioWare on the gamepad screen, where you play a succession of micro games, similar to how you do in the previous series, while on the top screen you have a view of a 9-volt, who is the character playing the gamepad, who's in his bedroom, and the idea is that he's staying up late at night when playing games when he's not supposed to be, and occasionally his mum will come in to check on him to make sure he is in fact asleep. Which does play very well with the gamepad, because the micro games are so fast and require your attention, and a lot of the games are very reflex based.
That was my one thing on there. My first glance at this, I was thinking like this was just a small mini game collection and not just micro games. I mean, but those are present, right?
Yeah. Well, in this one game, there are micro games. It's very odd. I think they should have almost gave this bit its own entire mode, but it is just one of the dozen or so games. So you're playing these traditional micro games, and occasionally you'll see your mum walk by the window, and at that point you need to kind of be ready to, if she's about to go through the door, you've got to press basically both triggers, and you hide under your blanket. But yeah, it's almost a zombie-esque fashion of looking at one screen, or being distracted by one screen when you need to be looking at the other, and vice versa. So that was really quite fun, and almost also ironically, my second favourite game of the single-player collection is the Pirates game, which showed up at a couple of E3s a couple of years back.
Yeah, I remember that.
Definitely.
And it feels like a Rhythm Heaven game, which I had also heard from previous impressions of people playing it on the E3 show floor. So it's very rhythm-based, it's got some good music going on it, and you hold out the gamepad in front of you, and depending on the commands that Captain Wario gives from his ship, you need to swing around the gamepad either just completely to the centre of you, above you, to the left of you, or to the right of you, and then do that in some sort of sequence. And you hold it down flat to pull arrows out afterwards. But it builds up a nice rhythm, and it feels very polished, and it looks very nice. What is worth mentioning about Game & Wario also is the multiplayer modes, which, as I said earlier, are completely separate. And you've got four completely unique games for multiplayer. One of them is essentially Digital Pictionary, which, as simple as it sounds, is a fairly decent representation of that game. So if you have a load of mates rounds, it's a surprisingly fun game to play. You're obviously doing your drawings on the gamepad as they display on the TV, and obviously people try and guess what they are. And then the person on the gamepad then inputs who guessed the correct answer and passes it over, and it carries on until the time runs out. The other three games are... There's a game where one person is a thief trying to steal fruits, which you can also...
What is it with people stealing fruits?
That is an interesting theme, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not like... I understand. It's not just money or jewels. It's fruit. What part of, like, you know... Obviously, as good as, the fruit is for your body and, you know, nutritionally good, it's just... Why fruit?
It does seem a bizarre trophy for a thief.
I'm going to steal all the bananas so nobody has it. Take that, potassium.
So, anyway...
I'm going to hop over to to Lewis's Animal Crossing area, plant them, sell them, and then chop them down. Endless cycle.
That's just... So, I'll finish off this second game, because I'm realizing the descriptions of these games, because they are so bizarre. Let's take a little bit of time. So, just to throw this concept to people listening, the person on the gamepad is moving around this player from a kind of a top-down 2D perspective. The same view is on the TV, and what the other people playing the game are doing, without controllers in their hands, they're trying to figure out who the person is who's controlling on the gamepad. So basically you're looking at a city type scene, lots of characters walking around, one of them is the actual person controlling on the gamepad, and you'll notice, or you may not notice, the fruits disappearing. So the people without controllers are basically just trying to keep a lookout on who the human is, and once the time runs out, everyone just places their votes. And it's a very bizarre game, but I've played it with a couple of people, and it went down really well. It's just a almost Nintendo Land's something you've never played before type experience.
That's actually how when I saw this game, I almost saw it as another version of Nintendo Land, but it sounds like it's actually maybe a lot more fun with a lot more content in depth to it.
It will be... I'm not sure if it's going to have the staying power of Nintendo Land's. Although I've heard negativity around it on the internet, it's a game me and my friends, even to this day, keep going back to. We are huge fans of those free competitive games. The Mario Chase, the Luigi's Mansion, and the Animal Crossing one. We keep coming back to it every couple of weeks. Gaming Wario is a lot of fun. However, if you're not going to play it multiplayer, I would be hesitant to recommend it, because you will burn through those one-player games in a mere couple of hours.
And I understand how the price is at $40, but I think if you're just going to be having this just for maybe a single-player experience or something like that, maybe around $30 would have been the sweet spot for this one. Because, for a few reviews I've heard already from Game & Wario, it's been like... it's mixed so far. Given the drought of Wii U games we have, it's just... This one is just a little snack for the bigger titles that comes out there, whatever. But it just... One thing that you kind of have to look at is, like, all the games on there, there's not that many on there as far as, for a single-player experience, even though this is really meant for multiplayer. But some of these games can be kind of labeled as... unoriginal, or even, I don't know, just the game selection just seems a little sparse.
It is, and it is weird that I feel it plays better as a multiplayer game, so I think they should have added more multiplayer games. It seems they focused on the one player, but they're not really good enough to be repeat experiences, or they're not really designed to be repeated experiences. Although they do have those local online scoreboards, because they are only local online scoreboards, unless you happen to have this really close group of people playing the same Wii U console, really dedicated to Game & Wario, you're not going to get much use out of it.
This is definitely one of those games that I think that when they launched it, they should have launched the downloadable version at a less expensive cost than the physical version. Just for that reason. I mean, if you're going to purchase it online, maybe it's something that you'll, maybe play a little bit more on your own, but if you're going to purchase the physical cartridge to take to a friend's house or whatnot, or I should say disc, not cartridge, but to take it to like a friend's house, I think that definitely is worth the more money. But the DLC, I've always been a fan of it being less expensive than the physical copy, but I definitely think this is one of those times that it's more true.
Don't you think that this would be, I mean, Nintendo talked about this, how they thought about putting Game of Mario, you know, as a pack-in game for the Wii U, well, you know, built into the system. Do you think that would have actually helped out maybe a bit if both those games were packed in probably to the Deluxe Edition, or would we still be talking about, you know, the console's, like, struggling sales at this moment?
Well, I think Game of Mario would have been a good candidate to lump in with both of the different SKUs. I'd say the basic one comes with Game & Wario, and the Pro comes with both Game & Wario and Nintendo Land. It's just that sort of, although it doesn't have the multiplayer or the almost repeat player experience of Wii Sports, it does have the same letting you know what the controller does in all of its variety of different ways. That does come across very well with different games. Each game is focused around using the gamepad in a different way, whereas Nintendo Land uses a lot of games, a lot of well-polished games, but using only a couple of different concepts of the Wii U.
I just forgot what we're talking about.
Okay, I think that's enough from what has Lewis been playing. What I'll do, if we hand over to Scott now, I believe you have some other console news.
Yeah, I actually haven't played a lot of Nintendo-themed games specifically, or Nintendo Wii or 3DS games. I did play recently, I think it was on Friday, if I remember correctly, I downloaded Urban Trial Freestyle, which is an indie game that I was able to receive for a demo and review from Tate Multimedia. And it's actually a pretty awesome little game. It costs about $5.99. If you purchase it before July 4th, or July 4th is the latest, you can purchase it for a 20% off discount from the eStore. So definitely something to check out. And it kind of reminds me of an updated and edgier version of Excitebike. It's definitely a physics-based game. You have to use the circle pad to either balance yourself forward or backward, depending upon the various ramps you're going to, you know, land on or jump off of. And it's got a lot of cool little mini games inside each race course. So you can either try to get the highest jump or the best loop or whatnot from there. So definitely a great little fun game to play on the 3DS for a download. And if you can't finish the trial with the different stunts, you can also rush through and do a time trial to race through it. And you can upgrade your bike as well as your clothes and stuff like that. So, cool little game. Definitely something you should check out if you just want a quick game to play, you know, if you have 5 minutes to spare or whatnot. But mostly what I've been playing, on Saturday, I received the Ouya in the mail, which was kind of surprising. So I was pretty happy to see that. Surprisingly, I knew it was going to be a small little console, but when I opened up the box and saw the controller and the console, the controller is actually bigger than the console itself, which the console is about 3 inches by 3 inches. So,
what you bought was a somewhat virtual successor to that trackball controller from the Atari 7200.
In a way, that's basically what it reminds me of. I mean, it's that basically plays Android games, Android based games, I should say. But for $99.99, it's a pretty awesome little system. It was very easy to hook up. It comes in the box, the one controller, the unit itself, a power cord, an HDMI cord. And one thing that really surprised me, it actually came with two Duracell batteries. Usually when I open up the anything that includes batteries, they're just some sort, like, cheap knockoff batteries that last a couple days, maybe a week, and they're gone. But actually came with pretty decent batteries. Setup was really easy. Once I plugged it in, I created an account, and it does make you put in credit card information, which I thought I didn't want to do because I'm sure that my kids are accidentally going to buy something on there. But it's only used if you actually purchase a game. But what I love about it is every single game available is downloadable free, And then you get to experience usually the first portion of the game. And once you get so far, I want to do something else. Like one game I downloaded, which I can't remember the name of. If you want to exit the town, you have to purchase the game. Games are pretty inexpensive. I think the most expensive one I've seen so far is around $9.99 U.S. dollars, but most are around $3, $4, $5.99. I was kind of concerned that it was going to be a lot of little, basically quick kind of games, kind of just to play on a whim and whatnot. I knew Final Fantasy III was on there, which is basically the iOS Android port to the console. So I downloaded that first. Obviously, it's a purchase, but you get to start off the game to try it out. And it actually looks very, very good on my TV in the living room. So I was kind of wondering how they were going to scale that up. And it really looks almost exactly like it did on the iOS and Android devices. So very, very happy there. The only game, though, I can really say we've probably downloaded about 10 games so far. And the one game that actually has caught the most attention in my house is called Amazing Frog. It's quite possibly the stupidest game you'll ever play, but it's one of the most addictive games. Basically, you're a frog. You're walking through Swindon, which is a town in somewhere in England. I'm not sure where. And basically, it's just you trying to fall and trying to fall and glide as long as you can and get points. And I think our so far we've reached about 20,000 points just by jumping off buildings, sliding into different barriers and cans that blow up and stuff, and just going back and forth. And that's probably what we've been playing most of the weekend. We'll just pass the controller back and forth, and it's just really fun. The only complaints I really have about the system is it does freeze every so often from what I've seen, but I've heard that there'll be some updates to prevent that from happening. And it only came with one controller, and there are a lot of two-player games. So that's one complaint, but I'm sure we'll get another controller soon.
So to throw in a really bad joke here, or bad pun, Oya Mad Bro?
Oh, man, no, not at all. Wow, that was bad. But, no.
Yeah, I can just hear listenership just dropping right in the minute.
It's actually a really fun little system. I mean, it's got a lot of the little, almost, I could compare it back to Game & Wario, where there's a lot of little mini games and so on in it, as Lewis was talking about. But there's also a lot of really good games on there, too. I shouldn't say good, because the mini games are good as well, but a lot more massive games that you can actually sit down and spend a lot of time on. But there's also those that if you have 5 minutes, half an hour to spare, just turn it on and get at it and move on when it's time. So I would say that for a console, $99 for it, it's definitely well worth the cost. And I actually expect to see a lot more from the Ouya in the future. I mean, just from what I've seen so far and just the various types of games and the quality that's on there, I have a feeling that next year at E3, the Ouya people won't be forced to sit outside of the hotel or the convention center, and hopefully they won't have the
they have boxes that they sit out
basically what happened last year. They kind of forced their way in. They bought a permit and set up outside on a sidewalk across the street. And I don't know if we talked about it, but the people that run E3 actually the parking space is right in front of their little booth on the sidewalk. They parked semis there to kind of block it because they kind of snuck their way into E3 kind of from the outside. So the E3, the place that runs E3, they actually put big semis there to kind of block the view. And the Ouya people actually hung signs right in front of the semis saying their booth was there. So apparently they got the police called on them, and they showed their permits, and the police said carry on, and everything was good from there. So hopefully that didn't leave some bad blood between E3 and the Ouya crew. But I think they'll be inside next year, and I think it's something we should watch in the future that can really, really make it maybe become the big four within the next couple of years.
Quick question on the Ouya front. What is the actual controller like?
Actually, yeah. The controller itself is actually really comfortable. It's kind of U-shaped. It's sort of boxy on the top with the handles at the bottom. So it kind of reminds me of a PS3, PS1, just a PlayStation controller in general. But it's bigger, it's beefier. The The hand grips are much larger. It's got two circle pads with a directional pad below it. It's got four buttons, which are the O, U, Y, and A buttons. And then it's got L1, L2, R1, R2 on the top. So very comfortable. Actually, the one thing I have problems with newer controllers is the L1 and L2 and the 1 and 2 buttons at the in the trigger controls. And navigating those, is, for some reason, my fingers just don't fit those very well. So it's always a challenge for me to get that comfort spot on there. But the Ouya, my hands fit perfectly in there. So you can tell they spent a lot of time on the controller. The only thing that I would say I have against the controller is the battery placement. The instructions...
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah, the instructions do not tell you how to put the batteries in. I actually tried to, I read the instructions twice thinking I might have missed it. And there's no obvious place for it. So the top portion of the grips on the sides actually pops off, which is kind of weird because there's the cutouts for the circle pads and the directional pad and the buttons. So when you pop it off, you basically see the holes there that fit over those buttons and circle pads. So it's kind of odd placement to take that off. I think if they probably should have had the bottom pop off, if anything. But both of them pop off. You put one battery in each side. So, you know, they fit in easy. I had a little bit of trouble getting the left grip back on. That's the one with the circle pad and the directional pad. I had a little issue trying to get that snap back into place, but it wasn't too bad overall. My issue was that it took me probably 5-10 minutes to get enough courage to try to pry those sections open to see if that's where it was. But once I found it, it's not a big deal. So I think they should add that. The controller is a little light, though. I mean, with those basically the grips being hollow other than the battery in there, it seems a little cheap to me. But it other than that, it's very comfortable to use. I think I'm just used to some of the other controllers like PlayStation that has the actual vibrate function and so on. So they're a little bit heavier in the handles. But overall, I think it's a great controller.
Okay. Just one last thing. Just when you mentioned the batteries under those plates on the front of the controller, are there any issues with if you have a strong grip on your controller? Is there any chance of those plates coming off?
It doesn't seem to be. I mean, they snap into place pretty well. There's a pretty good seal around the edge. I didn't have a screwdriver near me, so I grabbed a knife out of the kitchen drawer and kind of wedged it in there. And it does have a tight seal on there, so I think it's okay. Another thing that was kind of pressing to me, and it's a very little thing, but a lot of times when you open up a controller or anything that holds batteries, you'll see that small little ribbon that fits underneath the battery to kind of help you pull it out. Many times it's just a real cheap little ribbon, and as many times as I replace batteries in some of those devices, it tends to fray and tear off. This is actually kind of a pretty heavy duty ribbon. It's pretty thick. Looks like it's going to last a while. So they put a lot of thought into the little things. I think that maybe the battery placement, that just instead of having them pop into the top of the controller, it should have been on the back. I mean, that's really my biggest issue there.
So you're enjoying your time with this thing so far?
So far, yeah. I mean, I just started playing with it and kind of just screwing around with it, downloading random things. But one thing I found is, especially with a lot of the mini games, is my kids are just completely taking control of this thing. So, like I said, Amazing Frog. I've had it since probably Saturday around noon to 1 o'clock. I would say that from then until now, most of the time has been my kids just playing Amazing Frog, because it's just such an odd little game. I mean, it's so pointless, but it's so fun at the same time. I mean, it's really, really addicting. And we've probably gotten, out of all the game time, we probably have a good 8, 9, 10 hours into that game. And there's no point in it, so there's really, we're not getting anywhere. It's just running around and trying to beat each other's scores.
Okay, actually, I've got a question from a developer point of view here. Hoping you can help me out. You say you've played the system a fair bit. How much money have you had to put down on games so far?
So far, I have put absolutely zero. That's the great thing about the system, because every game is required to be free to download. So you are basically paying to try them out. There are good amount of games that are 100% free, like Amazing Frog, for example. I keep referencing that one, but it's something we played so much. So that game is 100% free. But there are other games, for example, like we'll reference Final Fantasy III. Obviously, Square Enix is not going to give that game away for free. So I'm not sure how far along you have to play in that game before you have to start paying. I'm guessing right after the very first quest is over, they're going to force you to pay, or when you leave the first town. But when you get to a certain point in the game, it will actually tell you, I played one game, and I can't remember the name, but I tried to leave the town, and as soon as I tried to open the door, it said, would you like to pay for the full version of this game? And you can either hit yes or no. If you hit yes, it'll take you to another screen that asks you, are you sure you want to pay? It'll cost $5.99 or whatever the cost is. So dollar-wise, I think most games are minimal, it's all depends. I mean, if you want to put a game on there that is, you know, 100% free, you can obviously do so, to get your games on there. But if you want to charge, you know, they're going to play enough to get either addicted to the game or absolutely hate the game, and they're going to make their decision. If they're addicted to the game, obviously they're going to go ahead and spend the money on it, especially if it's minimal. One other thing that, you know, I'm not a developer, so I didn't look into it a lot, but there is a, the menu for it is either play, download, I want to say it's make, which is their version of develop, and then there's basically a settings. It will actually take you to a section where you can, basically they'll give you links and where to go to, basically download and, you know, get everything you need to create your own games, because it's 100% open source. You being a developer, I'll actually, see if I can get those links and forward them off your way, Lewis. It's, from what I understand, from what I've heard, it's very easy to develop for the console. It's just a matter of just getting it done.
Yeah, I think this console is going to live or die by if developers can actually make money from it. We know there's, as you said, Square Enix have jumped in with Final Fantasy III, and I've heard there's some other big names at launch ready. But because I think there will be a lot of people buying this because they can play free games on it, I'm not sure if it's going to have the longevity on the market, because I'm not sure if the market will sustain it. Do you think this will be kind of relegated just purely to hobbyists, or do you think it could thrive and develop a scene?
I think it could thrive if a lot, especially if a lot of the big developers such as like Square Enix really jumps on board for this, especially for some of the older games, like Final Fantasy III, for example. There's still a huge fan base for that game, so there's really something that you know, that they can jump on board with, sell the game at a less expensive cost. I think that one is around $14.99, which is one of the more expensive games I've seen on there, but it's right in line with what Square sells for, like the iOS and Android devices. I don't know. I think it depends on the type of games and the quality games. From what I've seen, there's a very good mix between the mini games and the very, you know, the more in-depth and adventure RPG type games. So there's a very good mix. I think the one thing that they should do with the search function is separate the type of games a little bit better. The search function is a little bit hard to use. It's basically just a list of games with a screenshot of each game, usually the title screen. So just going on that, you're kind of guessing it as to what you're looking at, and then you can click on it and see a little bit more in depth. But I think that there is a chance for the system to become pretty big, just for the fact that you're not guessing at what you're getting. I know with myself, especially having kids and a mortgage and everything, for me, it's when I go out and buy a new game, unless I'm really informed about it, I'm not just going to go out and buy a game on a whim, even from an eShop or whatnot. I'm going to do a lot of research about it. But if I'm at like a store and I see a cheap game or whatnot, I might not just buy it just because it's cheap or whatnot. On this, the fact that I can actually try it out first, that alone will make me more apt to buy something off it. I haven't bought anything yet, but I've downloaded, like I said, around 10 games so far, and I'm sure we're going to download a lot more before we really make some decisions on what we're actually going to buy.
Okay, and Harrison, have you been playing anything Nintendo-related?
You know, I did think about picking up Game & Wario, but I'm still just saving up right now for Well, just for Pikmin 3 at the moment. That and I've been trying to, well, download New Super Luigi U at the moment, which, you know, finally hit online for the eShop just last week. But, of course, you know, where I'm located, it's very hard to even download even the simplest of titles, be it a virtual console title or even just a system update. So I'm just waiting for the perfect time to get this other way or just, you know, lug my Wii U to a friend's house with a better internet connection to buy this. But, yeah, but that's on my radar right now. But at the moment, I haven't been really having much time to do so at the moment. Just been keeping up with the site, and it's a very odd thing. It's like, help write for a Nintendo-affiliated site, and yet I'm just lagging behind on playing games.
Yeah, we really need to get to that status where they actually start sending us review copies.
I've actually reached out to a couple people, and I've gotten a lot of ignored responses and so on, so not a lot of people are wanting to send us review copies, but we'll get there, I think. I've got a few of the indie developers to send me a few here and there, so hopefully we can get more in the future.
Yeah, definitely, and Pikmin 3 is definitely shaping up nicely. It's definitely a game I'm going to be picking up when it's released at the end of this month, for Lucky Me over here.
Ah, that's true.
You guys have to wait till, is it early next month?
I don't remember the exact release date, but I think it is, yeah.
Okay, I think that takes us into the news. We've got three hand-picked new segments to discuss on today's show. The first of these is Walter's thoughts on social media connectivity. In an interview with Nikkei.com, Iwata had basically the following blurb to say. I'll read this now and then we can talk about the meanings behind this. The primary use of Twitter and Facebook is not gaming, but a means of communication. Although I don't use either of them, if I did, I'd imagine I'd use it to talk about my outings and vacations to people who aren't exactly video game enthusiasts. I don't think my former classmates would care to hear about my new Mario Kart record and so on. So, that little clip from Iwata is actually very insightful of his views on what social media are and how the gaming industry currently uses them for things like boosting high scores.
Well, in the case of this, I'm always bugged upon, you know, dozens upon dozens of, like, game requests on Facebook, and, you know, and my attempts to block these requests have been a bit futile. I mean, it seems like anybody, the next good game kind of pops up. But in this, it's really that sharing of, like, scores and what this does, especially on social media. My question is, why does it matter? I mean, as far as to, like, this. And, yes, you have these online leaderboards in very, like, you know, for be it on PSN, Xbox Live, or maybe what we would have through the Miiverse. It's just these things that you would see on social connectivity, I mean, it's, you know, I just don't see any place for it right there. I mean, it does not really get up to the upper echelon of what gaming is supposed to be. This is what I believe he's talking about, is that casual market of, you know, Facebook and, you know, Facebook games that, you know, are very simple in design and easy to, you know, learn and to control, but it offers really nothing new as in terms of originality and a type of experience that what you could probably get on a big boy console.
Exactly. I mean, I can't stand when, especially when one of my friends purchases a new PlayStation game, they pop it in for the first time, and obviously when you first start playing, you get a bunch of trophies right off the start because you're getting all these minor things out of the way, and it's just one after another. There is just, you know, one trophy after another just crowding my newsfeed. I do think that there is a tendency to brag about a game during in social media, but it's not really, you know, I think what he's wanting is more something that not only brags, but something that would want you to kind of advertise the game. For me, I mean, it's just, most people don't do that, though. They might brag a little bit, like, oh, I got high score on this. Nobody really cares. People skim over that stuff because there's no real content to it. I think that when you get to social media, when those work best for specific game bragging and help and so on from there, you know, things like Facebook groups, for example, those work great. You know, for example, I'm a member of a couple of those groups there, and I share my articles on Infendo and Nerdsy with those groups too to help get the word out. But you know, for example, Kingdom Hearts. I'm part of a pretty large Kingdom Hearts group, and in there, there's discussions on, you know, the new games that are coming out, and what do we think we should see next, or what do we think about the last game, and, you know, if it's a new game like Dream Drop Distance was, you know, I got to this part, and I can't beat this specific enemy. What did you guys do? So there's a lot of discussion there, but everybody there is obviously a fan of that game. So everybody there knows about it. There's not a lot of advertising going on. It's really just sharing our thoughts. Whereas with, you know, with what he's getting at, I think he's going more towards the Miiverse is what he's going to use for the social media and wants to use, because those are Nintendo fans. They may not necessarily be a fan of, say, New Leaf, but with all the talk about it, they very well could become a fan of New Leaf. I know that, for example, that game, everything I've heard about New Leaf is 100% positive, and everybody has having a blast with the game. If it was a game that I wasn't so, you know, if I wasn't sure about, or I thought, I think I'll skip this that one. By now, I would completely be on board, because nobody has said anything bad about the game yet. And, you know, I've seen that on the Miiverse. I've seen that almost everywhere. But as far as the little tweets or the quick statuses on Facebook or Tumblr or wherever else you might want to post your bragging rights, I almost think he's right here. I think that, you know, getting away from that and going to your own controlled environment is so much better.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there, Scott. It does explain what they did with Miiverse and the reasons behind it. I'm sure they get a lot of questions why they didn't just incorporate Facebook or Twitter as their social media of choice and just simply post there, grab the feeds from there, grab people's friends from there. And their reasons behind it are because these aren't exclusively gaming-centric places. There's going to be a lot of people there who simply don't care about this information. So their approach to it is the complete opposite. They've created their own gaming-centric platform, which obviously you can access directly from your Wii U and in the future 3DS as well. Each game has its dedicated little community where you can talk exclusively about this game to just the people who want to talk about this game. And turning the situation on its head, what they've now obviously let us done is access this community or this service from our PCs, from our smartphones, from our tablets. So we get this Twitter or Facebook experience, but purely for an audience who want to hear and talk about the relevant Nintendo content that we're searching for.
Absolutely.
Okay, our second story is Scott's weekend discussion on handheld gaming.
Sure. Basically, there was an article that I had posted, and I can't remember the exact article, but in the comments of the article, there was actually some feedback that, you know, people's children or in younger kids in general just aren't playing handheld gaming devices anymore, such as, you know, like a PS Vita, PSP, or the DS or 3DS and so on, and that they're opting more for things like the iPhone or the iPad or the Android phones and tablets and so on. And I found that kind of interesting because, you know, with my kids, sure, they've always got a smartphone or a tablet in their hands, but they also do use the 3DS, and I have a 3DS, a Vita, a PSP, multiple Game Boys, and other DSs also. And there's always one of those in their hands. So it was actually just an open discussion, you know, is handheld gaming dying as a general? Are we looking at the newer generation is going to want the quicker games on like the iOS and the Android devices, whereas the older generation is holding tight to those devices? So within the next generation or two, will we even see a handheld, or will the handheld and the console become one and the same? You know, kind of like with the Wii U gamepad, maybe in the future that will be a handheld rather than having two separate devices. So I just kind of opened it up there, and it actually seemed to be a pretty mixed bag. I mean, there were some that did say that, you know, as adults, they're using the portable devices more than their kids are. I've had other people say that their kids are definitely using the handhelds much more. I don't know if that's a case that, you know, the parents aren't giving their kids iOS devices and tablets and so on. Maybe that is the hint. But, you know, I kind of found it interesting that a lot of the responses I got, not just on Infindo, but other places that I had posted the link to, that, a lot of people had said, no, the younger kids just don't use the handheld devices. Yet we see games like Animal Crossing New Leaf and almost every Pokemon game that comes out are huge, huge sellers, and they're almost exclusively on handheld devices now. And it just made me wonder, is it the adults and the grown-ups buying these games now to play because of their childhood, or is it just maybe a location-based thing? It's still kind of fuzzy, though. Even after that discussion, we did get a good split in between the people that sided on either side. So, I guess, what are your thoughts? For me, I think handhelds will be around for a while, especially now that, you know, we have them getting much more powerful and can play a lot bigger games than they were able to in the past. And that's my thoughts, though. I mean, what do you two think?
Just to confirm here, when we say handhelds, are we talking about, gaming dedicated handhelds or things like the iPod and the iPad?
As far as handheld gaming, I guess I probably should have clarified on there, but yeah, actual gaming handhelds, dedicated handhelds, like the 3DS or the Vita and so on from there.
I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon, at least from Nintendo's division. Sony's may be a different story altogether, but I know last generation Nintendo was asked who they believe their nearest competitor was. The person who asked the question at that time was probably expecting the answer to be either Microsoft or Sony, but Nintendo came back with the answer of Apple. And the way they view competition is you essentially are competing for people's time.
Exactly.
yeah, and with hindsight, that was a very clever statement to make, especially as you've noted that we are seeing kids and adults with devices like iPads, which do a variety of different tasks in addition to playing games. And it's with these devices that Nintendo needs to compete with. Now, the answer to that question is not to necessarily try and emulate this, not to necessarily be a device which can do the same things the others can, but is to offer this unique experience, something like the DS and the 3DS can do. I think Nintendo's handhelds will be able to stick around if they keep up their tradition of keeping things fresh instead of Sony's, at least it's from its two attempts of just making a powerful portable, but still a downwards experience of what you would get on the TV.
Absolutely.
I mean, for me when it comes to what you have these gaming on tablet, like with tablet gaming and, you know, traditional handhelds is, yes, I mean, for some, does it pose as like a big, you know, a very big, like, you know, like risk or danger to, you know, the life of like these traditional handhelds, and if they're going to have another life cycle, like after what we see with the 3DS and Vita. And my reasoning is that I think there is a place for it. It's just like handheld, like, you know, handhelds, like with these different types of technology, they need to evolve to accommodate to what their competition is. You know, you have to make those full console-fledged experiences on a handheld viable. I mean, you have a lot of these iOS or Android titles, you know, on these tablets, you know, porting a lot of these big console games. For instance, I remember seeing Knights of the Old Republic is now available on iOS for right now, which still boggles my mind. And it's, the thing is, there's not any of those original console-type experiences, like, well, a lot of them on iOS to actually, you know, to really bring that kind of discussion forward. And do I see it probably going further? I see there's a place for handhelds. It's just, it's a matter of, like, when it comes to how they're priced and what games that they do offer. I mean, Nintendo's already shown that right now, especially by, you know, from having that price drop to the 3DS 2 years ago, and of course, you know, releasing the XL, giving up the options, and that and their steady stream of first-party titles. Yeah, there's a place for it, but what I see with iOS titles, I mean, I see them as just quick pick-up-and-play experiences, whatever. I mean, if I'm in line for a grocery store or, you know, outside the doctor's office waiting, I'll pick up my phone and play, like, a little bit of, like, Tiny Wings or Angry Birds or even Infinity Blade, just for like a quick round before I'm waiting. Obviously, for my handhelds, I would use to do that with my Game Boy. Now my phone has taken that place. But now I'm seeing more of my handheld being used for road trips or plane, like, you know, for on a plane ride. I mean, it's all evolving in a ways to right now to, you know, accommodate for its competition.
And I think you definitely hit on something there. It's all about the evolution of the handheld consoles themselves. You know, not one thing that Nintendo's not afraid to do is try something new. And as long as they keep trying new things, and we saw, I would have never guessed 5 years ago that we would have had a handheld device with 3D visuals and no 3D glasses. I would have never, ever even imagined that. Now we have that, and I mean, I don't know what's going to come next, but I'm sure Nintendo's not going to be afraid to try it out. And I think as long as they keep everything unique and keep one step ahead of everybody else, I think that it's going to be here for a long, long time. I mean, you can only do so much with an iOS game.
I agree.
But if the iOS were able to give us that same 3D experience, and who knows, maybe there will be a mobile device in the future that will, that would be great. But I mean, I don't think you can match what Nintendo has right now, or hopefully what they have in the future.
Yeah, I think ultimately, whether Nintendo sticks with the portables or sticks with their traditional consoles, or having both, doing something new, doing something different, Nintendo sells Nintendo hardware because of Nintendo's IPs and Nintendo's games. Whichever form they come in, they will be around for a long, long time. Depending on what happens with the market trends on mobiles and tablets and all the rest, will depend on how we'll be playing these games. I think portable gaming from Nintendo is going to be to stay for quite a while.
I agree, and I think there's a place for it, and I think a lot of Nintendo's, you know, revenue does come from their handheld titles, and if they're dead set on, like, you know, pumping money into it, I feel like there's still a place for it.
Absolutely.
Okay, and Harrison, would you like to conclude the news with a piece from Microsoft?
In the category of, you know, WTF news that I like to label most of the time when I see stuff like this pop up my RSS feed, but when Microsoft first bought Rare back in 2002 for what would seem like $300 million, which I find, you know, in hindsight, not the wisest decisions right now, given how Rare has not really been the same ever since they've been with Microsoft. You know, key members have left. Key members have left from the company.
They make an export.
So on and so forth. But, well, they have that. Those little things. I mean, did anybody... oh, yeah, we got a new Killer Instinct, but Rare's not making it. It's being made by Double Helix, so... And that, it's just a... Well, I feel like, hey, did you like Street Fighter 4? We're just going to copy this right now. I'm like, whatever. But today, Microsoft thought they had owned, in a statement this week, one of a member of, like, a member of Rare by the name of Chris Saver. Formerly of Rare... He had mentioned that Microsoft thought they had owned the Donkey Kong franchise. Hold back your laughter, I know. And his quotes were this: "The current generation of enablers won't even know they own their IPs. Here's a true story. When Rare was first bought by Microsoft, a group of executives came on a tour. One of them noticed the Donkey Kong posters. Wow, I'm reading this wrong. Everywhere, and said, hey, that's great, we own Donkey Kong, right? Right?" And of course, there was a massive sigh from, you know, Chris. He said, like, and he said this via his Twitter account. According to the article, you know, he would, went on to say some words of wisdom about the uber-popular game, and his quote, "Christ, whatever happened to Star Fox? Microsoft aren't the only ones sitting on prime real estate and wondering why their arse is sore." Wow. How do you not know this exactly? That's like somebody buying up, God forbid, Retro Studios, and they thinking they own the Metroid franchise.
I almost think it's just a matter of, you know, they bought Rare because they could, and they did, and they saw some posters hanging around, so they just assumed and really didn't go much further. Now, I have to think, though, that even though that was something newer that he had tweeted, I have to think that they found out for sure a while ago, because I can't imagine Microsoft going this long thinking they owned Donkey Kong and didn't attempt to create a Donkey Kong game because of its popularity. So I have to think that they found out a while ago about the issue, but were just too afraid to say anything. And, you know, now that Sievers is no longer with Rare, you know, why not share some of these stories? I mean, there's no risk of getting fired, of course. One of the readers did bring up a good point, though. You know, what about Diddy Kong? Diddy Kong was actually created by Rare, not necessarily by Nintendo. I haven't had a chance to look. I just saw the comment today, but that is interesting. I mean, it is, even though Rare created Diddy Kong, he was created for the Donkey Kong series. So would that make him still property of Nintendo? Would that make him property of Rare? Do they have, you know, shared rights?
It's the Kong surname that I think is
that's what
I'm thinking. Licensed.
Yeah, I believe the rights to the characters, if they weren't handed over in the actual creation process, were when the company changed hands. So Nintendo has full rights to all of the Kong characters that Rare created back in the day.
That would be my guess, absolutely.
Because obviously Diddy was in Donkey Kong Country Returns. I'm not sure what's strange about this story, whether them not knowing that they didn't own, or that thinking that they owned Donkey Kong, or thinking that they owned Donkey Kong but not trying to use the intellectual property in any way until this time.
I think this story would have been a lot better if they actually tried to make the game, you know, especially in secrecy, create the entire game from scratch, start to release it, and then have Nintendo step in and, you know, kind of tap them on the shoulder and kind of give it to them at that point. That would have made the story so much better, but just the fact that, you know, they just saw some posters and assumed that is just fantastic to me.
Yeah, it's also good to know that Rare do have posters of Donkey Kong up in the office system.
Yeah, they have posters there. It's like, yes, this is back when we used to make good games, you know.
With characters people care. Okay, and that just about wraps up the news, which brings us to our final feature, which is a discussion on second screen gaming. Second screen gaming technically came into our lives with the Nintendo DS Portable. However, the actual term second screen gaming is more of a recent issue and has come around with devices like the Apple TV, where you can use an iPad and a TV with certain functionality. But obviously what we know is the big product which is pushing this is obviously the Wii U and its gamepads. However, both Sony and Microsoft have unveiled certain services or certain devices, depending on the situation, which let you do a second screen gaming experience. The PlayStation 4 lets you hook up the PlayStation Vita to do some second screen gaming, and the Xbox One uses an app called Smart Glass. So what I would like to bring to the table is, what do we think the benefits or the disadvantages as such of having a second screen experience put into your game? And then afterwards we'll talk about how the competitors are trying to tackle this and what's good and bad about their offerings.
Well, I think that, in my view, the pros of this are definitely the enhanced experience when gaming. Obviously, we can only speak from the Wii U gamepad at this moment, but, you know, the fact that you can add another level to, you know, multiplayer gaming, for example, when playing Zombie U, one person can control where the zombies are appearing on the screen while somebody else is kind of oblivious to that. So it does add a little bit of, you know, difficulty to the game, which you wouldn't get otherwise, because there's that human element to it. But also using the gamepad for things like, you know, a menu screen. You know, in RPGs, it would be great to have all your menus right there, so you can quickly hit, you know, a healing potion or whatever you need to do just on the handheld while not interrupting your game on the screen. But also other things like the off TV play. Off TV play is huge in my house, especially when somebody's trying to watch a TV program. Just being able to pop a game in and play it on the gamepad itself. Those are definitely the pros that I see. There are cons. Although I don't see too many of the cons, but you know, one thing that I would like to see is more portability with the gamepad, which we don't see right now. where I can, you know, if I'm going to be going on a road trip, maybe be able to save that game from one to the other. And we do see it a little bit in things like Monster Hunter and so on. But maybe seeing that a little bit more often in games where you can just kind of stop playing on the Wii U and then take it elsewhere. But using the actual gamepad itself as the portable gaming device. Sure, that could take away sales from things like the 3DS, but I think there could be more into that there. Some of the other cons I could see potentially, especially with the PS4 and the Xbox One, is that, you know, for example, the Vita and whatever tablet you're going to use, they weren't necessarily developed for the second screen gaming. So I can see that there could be a lot of glitches there. You know, for example, with a smart glass enabled, a device with a smart glass app, if it's an older tablet, for example, it may not just have the power to run it. So maybe it could give people a bad experience. Obviously, if it's older and it doesn't have the power to run it, you shouldn't be able to use it on there, but people are going to try and it's going to happen and they're going to use that experience and call it a horrible option. To get that second screen, whereas a newer device might work perfectly with it. The Vita, the only problem I have like with that, like, con-wise, is that it's been tried before with the PS3. I tried it. It didn't work that well. It was kind of clunky to use, so it seems like they're going to streamline that a little bit more with the PS4. So hopefully it's a better experience, but again, the Vita wasn't developed for this, so even though the PS4 was developed to have this connectivity, the Vita was not. So we'll see how that works with that, but overall, I think there are more pros to a second screen than there are cons.
I have to agree with you on that extent as well, Scott. It's just, I feel what you have with Smart Glass and Vita, what you have with the Wii U, you have this experience built in out of the box, whereas what you have with Vita and Smart Glass, these are things that you have to buy to enhance your experience. Now, in the grand scope of things, it just does not seem really cost-effective as far as to buying all these different things to actually, you know, get these different features. I feel like it's going to be kind of problematic, especially, you know, in a financial, like, you know, state of realm. And I just don't see how this is really kind of smart as far as that. I mean, you have that off-TV play with Vita, and with, of course, with Smart Glass, you have, I can't think of that title they showed up during the Microsoft conference that was like it was a god-esque mode game, whatever. You would create these different modes and make these different titles. It almost had a bit of a feel like Little Big Planet, but just on a more, I mean, just kind of building off from it. I mean, but what I'm getting at this right now is that does this kind of take away from like the uniqueness that what Nintendo is trying to accomplish the Wii U? Well, kinda. I mean, we still haven't seen, I mean, the Wii U gamepad has a lot of potential for it. It seems like we've been banging that into everybody's heads for ever since the console was first unveiled. And yet we still have not seen something that was a bit of a game changer yet. I mean, obviously what we had seen with Nintendo Land, it did not really have that Wii Sports-esque, you know, success that we were hoping for the console. And right now it's just, it's gonna take probably one of that big title to kind of push these things for be it Smart Glass or Vita. I mean, in the Vita's case right now, I mean, a wonderful piece of machinery, yet it still doesn't have that scope of games and must have titles for it to be, you know.
Absolutely. You know, one thing with the Wii U, you do have the NFC capability, which they haven't really utilized yet, but they should be using in the future. So, you know, that's one thing that we haven't really seen with the Wii in action yet, which is another huge evolution for the gamepad. The PS4 and the Xbox One, I think you hit on it there. I mean, the extra cost involved. I've got the Vita, and honestly, I only have two games for it, and I've literally played it twice, and I have not played it since. So, a huge waste of money for me. However, it's part of my collection. I have so many consoles. It's, you know, I don't feel bad for purchasing it, but, you know, Smart Glass might be a little bit of a better idea because it's using devices that people already have for the most part, to utilize. But again, there are so many different types of those devices and, you know, they've got to have some sort of regulation on which of those devices can actually use it. Because if I'm pulling up an original Android tablet and trying to use like Smart Glass on it, if they even allow us to, then it's not going to function the way it should function. I'm seeing, because it's not going to have the power behind it. However, if you're using a brand new iPad, if they allow it on there, and I don't know if Apple will, because it's Microsoft versus Apple, but you know, if Apple allows Smart Glass to go on there, obviously it's probably going to run it just fine. We'll have to see though, but PlayStation and Microsoft, Sony and Microsoft, they're almost forcing the issue for people and not giving them the benefits of that built-in feature that comes with the device. So you definitely hit it on the head there.
In my point of view, I think the second screen gaming can do a lot for not just games, but the different types of services you can access on your consoles, like Nintendo TV and so on. However, you made a good point earlier, Scott, whereas the Wii U is actually a piece of hardware which is designed to interact with its controller and vice versa. However, I've owned both a iPad and an Apple TV box, and one of the features they let you do is to mirror what's on your iPad screen to your TV using the Apple TV box. Now, in theory, that's brilliant, but in actual practice, trying to stream these high-resolution games from your iPad to TV was not the perfect experience. If you're actually trying to mirror a decent game, it would be quite, at least from my experience, it was very laggy. Either the graphics or the sound would be out of loop. And because of that, it was absolutely impossible to play because your input method was the screen. So unless you were just purely looking at the tablet screen, which defeats the entire point of mirroring it to the TV, the game would be rendered completely unplayable. Now, I'm not sure how Sony's going to try and tackle this with the Vita, and from what we've seen from Microsoft, we're only going to have very simple interactions with games via Smart Glass. You are going to be pressing commands, you are going to be seeing a map from your game being updated every so often, or seeing stats being brought down, whereas what the Wii U does is anything the console can do, you can run that on the TV or on the gamepad at the same frame rate, which is obviously the perfect setup, and it's Nintendo's focus for the console. I see both Sony's and Microsoft's kind of introducing this as reaction to what Nintendo's doing with their console. I think they look back on what Nintendo did with the Wii last time and how they then had to retrofit these odd accessories to their systems halfway through the life cycles, and they decided they were going to put something in place just in case the Wii U was a huge success like the Wii was, grab onto the telcos of that success with their own solutions. Now, I don't think it's going to get supported too much on their side. We probably will see some clever uses from it. As I believe Harrison mentioned, there's an Xbox One game which shows the creativity of, you can draw on a tablet and it creates terrain on the in-game worlds. Those sort of examples are very nice, but I think they're going to be few and far between on the other systems. So the Wii U is the perfect platform for it, which makes it interesting how the second screen experience was almost a complete omission over the last E3 show we had. I think we only saw gamepad footage of one of the new games that was shown, and on the show floor, the games which didn't show off the gamepad in the trailers were just kind of downgraded to these maps or very simple simple commands. I kind of hope Nintendo hasn't, at this very early stage, lessen the focus off of the actual genuine interactiveness and uniqueness of the gamepad, and I hope they do have some really ingenious uses for it in development, which they've yet to show us.
It makes me feel like, I hope they don't go in this direction, is that, I mean, what we've seen with the 3DS is that they've taken a focus off the 3D and, you know, just as just a gaming handheld, as it what it should be, and, you know, in response, that was actually a smart move.
From the marketing side of things, people weren't really paying attention to the 3D aspect of the 3DS, which was a bit unfortunate for what they named the console. I think if it wasn't called the 3DS, there would now be a SKU which did not have the 3D screen. but because it's so embedded in the brands that it needs to be kept around. It's the other way of looking at how the Wii U does treat the second screen experience is looking back at the DS. Now the DS has two screens, but the 3DS still has two screens. They didn't go back to the one screen saying, we chucked in this extra screen, and there was only a very small percentage of games which did anything decent with the concept. Is it not worth just going back to the single screen? So I think it's there to give the option, and what's great, and I think it was almost, I'm not sure Nintendo planned this from the get-go, the fact that if the game doesn't take a unique feature from the gamepads, it guarantees this feature of being able to play it off TV.
I agree. I mean, I agree that they need something to actually, you know, bolster up probably what this is all about, you know. It needs to have that wow moment, like, you know, I totally get this.
Now, the other thing I think which would help is if they actually release additional gamepads. Now, I know back in the E3 conference of 2012, Reggie came out and confirmed that the system does support two gamepads, and they will be showing games using it at a later date. Now, I think the concept of having even more screens divided by players can make for some even more, I guess, complex and interesting gameplay types. We do have this weird division of asymmetric gameplay between TV and gamepad, and as fun as those are, I think there's only so much you can do with the asymmetric aspect, and you do need an equal second screen, or first screen it would be, to kind of have the sort of experiences we had on the connectivity with the GameCube and the Game Boy Advance with Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles and Zelda Four Swords. So I'm hoping that next year Nintendo will produce a additional gamepad for a fair price and introduce a new Four Swords.
I could see that actually, not necessarily the Four Swords, but, you know, new Four Swords type game. I could see that and a second gamepad being available by, at least announced within the next E3. Or even before then. One thing that I think that we're coming up upon is that it won't be much longer before the Wii U has reached its 1 year anniversary. I mean, we're really close to that now. And by that time, I think that they at the very least have to start selling us the extra gamepads, because the 1 year manufacturer's warranty for the original consoles will be used up. Now, unless they offer us an extended warranty or whatnot, it's going to be very hard for them to not have them available for sale. Obviously, they could be for sale through Nintendo themselves. But once they start selling these gamepads and getting them into retail stores, if they don't only sell them online, I think that's the point when we'll probably start to see more hints and rumors at using the secondary gamepad. Right now, it doesn't make sense because they're just not available for us. But once they are, if we could see games, hopefully at next E3, that give us a glimpse at what we'll do with that second gamepad, who knows? That might even be a feature in the next, you know, major Zelda. Maybe there'll be, you know, a second player feature in there. I doubt it, but, you know, a new Pokemon game would be huge to have that. You know, just having the ability to have you and a friend battle each other, on your game and so on. There's definitely a lot of possibilities for a second gamepad, and I really hope that we do see something like that, especially playing a two-player game off TV. I mean, there's plenty of times where myself and my kids would love to play a game, you know, a two-player game, like Nintendo Land, something like that, or Epic Mickey 2, for example, to play with both players, but one of us has to be on the TV. Actually, in Epic Mickey, you both have to be on the TV, but, you know, just both of you being able to play off-screen, playing against each other, Sonic Racing Unleashed. That's another example. I mean, it would just be awesome to be able to play that while somebody else is watching their favorite show on TV. So I think there's a huge, huge benefit for it with the Wii U controller in general. And I think that's something that, you know, Sony and Microsoft, they're not going to be able to keep up with, because one, I don't know any family that's going to buy two Vitas for that purpose. Sure, two people could have, you know, a tablet with smart glass enabled on it. Are they going to use it though? I don't know. Maybe with a tablet, but Vita, I don't see any way possible for that.
Yeah, and as good as two gamepad support would be, and I've just realized that four swords would be an odd fit for a system with two private screens. However, it does come back to the issue of support. We were talking about not enough game companies or not enough games in general making unique uses for the Wii U gamepads, and it's just being relegated to maps and so on. Are there going to be enough games to support the two gamepads to actually get people to go out and buy a second gamepad? The only thing I can think Nintendo could do in addition to help people to buy these additional gamepads is if it lets you use some of those multitasking features on the second gamepad while the first one's playing a game. So you could have your standard setup as you do today, but you introduce the second gamepad, and while the first person's playing, say, a new Super Luigi U on their gamepads, the second person on their gamepad could be on Miiverse, or could be on the internet browser, or any of those certain sets of apps which you can run while your game's suspended, but enable the ability to be able to do that while the game's running because you have this additional screen. Now, that alone, I think, would be pretty cool, and it adds an extra tablet, as it were, to the
What about extending that further, too? I mean, if we're going to look at doing multitasking on the device, what if, you know, say I'm signed into my account, so my Essel Pratt, I'm signed into that on the Miiverse, and I'm playing, you know, Sonic All-Star Racing, and then if my daughter is signed into her account on the second gamepad, now we're using our stats that we've racked up on our own accounts against each other. So, I mean, right now, if we're playing on Sonic, you know, we've each kind of got our own favorite racers, and we're leveling up those characters and so on. But what if she's worked really hard on her account and leveled up the racer on her account? Well, if we're playing on my account, it's almost an unfair advantage to me because I've really done all the leveling up on mine. She's going to use somebody that I probably haven't used already, and, you know, her vehicle's not going to be as leveled up. If we could take that and allow them to each use an account, that would bring that to just basically really make it that much better for the two people. And also, I mean, we could even take it a second level, and I don't know if the Wii U's got the power for it, but what if, you know, say I'm playing one game, what if she was playing a virtual console game on the controller at the same time? I don't know if the power is there for that, but that Nintendo's got a lot of room to use these controllers, and you're right. It is all on, you know, support for it. You know, what are the developers going to do to utilize it? And I think Nintendo's really got to have some talks with some of the developers to maybe not force them to use the controller in a unique way, because obviously if they're making a game for all three consoles, they might not want to spend the extra time to move that uniqueness into just the Nintendo console and not do anything unique with the other consoles. But if they can work that into a contract somehow, or, you know, even get some of these developers to have an exclusive game for Nintendo that utilizes this, this off-screen gameplay or the gamepad in some form that's unique that isn't being used anywhere else, that's, you know, Nintendo has so much room for you know, just improvement there that the other guys aren't going to have. I can't wait to see what happens, but you're right. The support is really, really where it's needed.
Let's wrap this one up. Okay, and that concludes another episode of Nintendo Radio. If you have any questions or topics you would like to talk about on the next show, then email us on tips@nintendo.com. And if you can, please give us a review on iTunes.
Join us next time, though. We will have a special Nintendo Radio in the coming weeks where, you know, Scott and Lewis and myself will be taking a road trip out to New Mexico on our search for Eugene. So it'll be live. The police may be on our tail as well, but that's a little project that we're going to do. So Nintendo Radio in search of Eugene.
Okay, and until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Nintendo Radio.